Okay, so...
If I don't see you, good luck.
Thank you. Thank you. You too. Okay, so Perek Tezvav. Okay. Last week we saw one example where the record of the story in Malachim is one way and the record in Divrei Hayamim is another way. This week is going to be even more striking. so, this is how it goes. So, we meet the... So in the 18th year of Yeravam, so Aviam becomes the king over Yehuda. Now, right, so Yeravam had a son Aviah, Rechavam has a son Aviam, but as the Mefarshim note in Divrei Hayamim, his name is also Aviah, and probably it was a nickname because people were getting confused, so they called one Aviah and one Aviam. One of the Mefarshim suggests it's Aviam, like from the way we do plural them, right? Aviah Shelahem, right? So Aviam.
Get Shlomo's grandkid.
Correct. So he becomes king, and Shaloshanim Malach Yerushalayim B'Shem Imam Acha Bar Avi Shalom. So he becomes he's king for 3 years, and his mother is Macha Bar Avi Shalom. There's a bit of confusion on who exactly this is, and his mother is, but we'll leave that aside for now. And he went in all the sins of his father, Rechavam, and his heart was not complete with God, like the heart of David, his father. It was for the sake of David that God had given him right? So the Mefarshim divide, either near means near, right? Like a candle, right? He had a lamp, he had a last light in Yerushalayim, or near, it's like a fallow field, you know, a plowed field, he gave him, but whatever it is, only because of David was he allowed to be in Yerushalayim, because he is the descendant of the Davidic dynasty. Asher asa David yashar b'nei Adonai v'lo sar mikol asher tzivahu kol mechayav rak b'dvaruyah achiti. And David had done everything right in his life besides for what he did with Uriah. Big but, one thing, and he did tshuva, and etc., etc., etc. And then there was war between Rechavam and Yeravam, his whole life. Presumably, there's a bit ambiguous, right? Kolim mehuz chayav, so, right? So it could be all the days of Yeravam's life, it could be all the days of Rechavam's life, it could be all the days of Aviam's life, right? So at the beginning, Rechavam didn't fight Yeravam. It sounds like eventually he did, and the entire life of Yeravam, of Aviam, rather, he's fighting as well. It's at, some of the Mefarshim suggest maybe Aviam is part of the war with Rechavam against Yeravam. And the rest of what Aviam did is written in Divrei Hayamim of Malchei Yehuda. And there was war between Aviam and Yeravam. And then he dies, and Asa, his son, takes over. So the whole story of Aviam is 8 psukim. So how would you characterize those 8 psukim? Right? What is he a good person, a bad person, significant king?
No.
Bad person, and basically insignificant. He's there for 3 years, and 3 years doesn't really mean 3 years. 3 years in king term can be as little as 1 year and four and 2 months, right? Because if you, right, once, right, well, it's once you get the calendar year, so a month before, once you get the year, so it's probably Shanim Kutaot, right? So he was king for a year and some odd, 2 years and something, nothing much, and the Psukim described that he wasn't good, okay? He wasn't as good as David. That's it. That's what you get in Malachim. If you turn to Divrei Hayamim, do you have a Divrei Hayamim? Because here, this is not like a few psukim. You get a whole...
You want me to bring
it? Probably here would be helpful, in this particular story, yeah. Because, you know, on one of these, on this particular one, it, shall we say, the tale sounds radically, radically different. Okay, here we go. There we go. Okay.
Where are we?
Okay, so Divrei Hayamim Bet, Perek, Yud Gimel. Okay. So in Divrei Yamim, this is how the story goes. You got it? Okay. Bishnat Shmona Esrei Lemelech Yeravamim Loch Avial Yehuda. Right, so now his name is Avial, as we mentioned. Not Aviyam. Okay, he becomes king. Shalosh Shanim Alach B'Yerushalayim V'Shem Imo Michayahu Bat Uriel Min Hagiva U'Melchama Ita Ben Aviyahu Ben Yeravam. So his mother's name is different here, which is a bit confusing because it's unclear whether it's his mother or his grandmother. And it may have to do not with who his actual mother was, but who the queen mother was at the time, because there's this role that we find throughout Sefer Melachim of certain women who were the queen mother, who like ran the government and had this position as queen mother. So one of them seems to have been this mother here. So it's not clear when it's talking about his mother and when it's talking about his grandmother who's running the government or at some level involved in the government. And we'll see that with Asa, who's his son. But okay, so far, besides for that little difference, not so much of a difference. Not so drastic. Pasuk Gimel. Va'yasor aviyad melchama b'chayil giburei melchama arba meot elef ish bachur v'yaravam arach imo melchama b'shmona meot elef ish bachur gibur chayil. There was a civil war between Aviyah and Yeravam. Aviyah got a force of 400,000 men, and Yeravam got a force of 800,000 men. And so suddenly you hear about a massive, right? In Malachim, it was like, oh, they fought. Here you hear suddenly it's a massive civil war. Vayakam Aviyah me'al hartz marim, asher b'har Ephraim, yomer shmo'uni Yeravam v'chol Yisrael. And Aviyah gets up at the top of the mountain, Har Ephraim, and he yells out and he says, "Listen, Yeravam and all Israel, Halo lachem ladat, ki Adonai Elohei Yisrael natan nam lachal l'davir Yisrael olam lo levanav brit melach. Don't you know that God gave the kingdom of the Jewish people to David forever as a brit melach?" Right, Brit Melech, right, there's a lot of different... Brit Melech means a Brit forever. Why it means that is an interesting question, right? Some of the Mepharshim say it's because salt prevents things from spoiling, right?
It stays forever.
Right, or because salt itself never spoils, or because salt is on the Karbanot, and just like the Karbanot are le'olam, so the Brit is le'olam, but whatever the etymology of it is, it means that it is forever. Vayakam Yeravam ben Nevat, Eved Shlomo ben David, Vayimro Adonav. And then Yeravam, the son of Nevat, who was a servant to Shlomo, the son of David, came and rebelled against his master. Vayikavtsu alav anashim reikim b'nei v'lial. Vayitamtsu al Rechavam ben Shlomo, Rechavan haya na'ar v'rach levav lo'od chazek lifneihem. And all this riffraff and scoundrels gathered around Yeravam to fight against Rechavam, who was young. He wasn't so young, right? Shlomo became king when we saw he was a teenager. Rechavam was 41, right? Not so young, but okay, he was 41. But still, and he didn't fight against them. He didn't stand against them, right? Which we saw in Melachim, he didn't. The Navi told him not to. Vata, atem omrim lit chazek lefnei mamlechet Adonai biyad b'nei David. Vatem hamon rav imachem egleis ahav asher asa lachem yiravam le'elohim. And now you are going to come and you're going to challenge the kingdom of God, which is held on to by the Davidic dynasty. You and your multitudes, and you've built these Eglei Zahav, you built these calves as gods. Halo hidachtem et kohanei Adonai et bnei Aaron v'leviim v'tasu lachem kohanim kamei haratzot kol abal l'malei yado b'far ben makar v'elim shiva v'ya kohen l'lo Elohim. And didn't you get rid of all the real kohanim of God, the sons of Aaron, the Leviim, and you made your own kohanim to bring the karbanot to whoever you want, to these non-entities, these non-gods? V'anachnu Adonai Eloheinu v'lo azavnuhu v'chaanim v'shartim l'Adonai b'nei Aaron v'alvim b'milachet. And we, God is, right, Hashem is our God, and we have not forsaken him, and we have the real Kohanim, and the real b'nei Aaron, and the real Leviim. V'inei imanu v'rosh ha'elohim v'chonam v'chatzotor ha'tshura l'ari aleichem b'nei Yisrael al tilachamu im Adonai Elohei avoteichem ki lo tatzlichu. And see, God is our chief is with us as our chief. His priests have the trumpets for sounding against you. Don't fight against the God of your forefathers. You'll never succeed. But Yeravam ambushes them and surrounds them in front and in back. And then suddenly Yehuda turns around and they're surrounded on both sides. And they turn to God and they scream out to God. They dive into Hashem and the Kohanim blow their shofars. And they blow the shofar and God hears them and punishes. He strikes down Yeravam. And the Jews, Bnei Israel, meaning the kingdom of Yehuda, of Yeravam, flee, because God gives over them to Yehuda. And they kill 500,000 people of the Jews. And the Bnei Yehuda is successful because they rely on God. And he conquers, Aviah conquers many cities in Yisrael. And Yeravam could never muster strength again during the time of Aviah, and God struck him down and he died. And Aviah grew powerful, and he married 14 wives and 22 sons and 16 daughters. And the rest of his story are written down in the story of the Navi Ido. And then Asa, his son, took over, and the land was peaceful for 10 years. So the story is completely different, right? First of all, far from being an ineffectual king, he carries out this massive military strike, right? Kills 500,000 people from Bnei Israel. And he comes off as the frummest person in the world, right? He's out there screaming, how dare you rebel against David? How dare you have Avodah Zarah? It doesn't make any sense. You can't do that. God promised the kingdom to Malchut David, and this is terrible. And when he's surrounded, he turns to God, and he davens to Hashem, and Hashem saves him. And then there's peace in his days. And you look at the two stories, right? Last week was bad enough, right? This week, you look at the stories and you try to figure out, how are these the same story? How did these come out of the same tale? So, what do you think? How do we get from one to the other?
I'm trying to see if we find any hints in the Pesukim.
So this one, Chazal, are actually very sharp in the Yerushalmi. I thank Alex Israel for pointing this one out in his book. This is very sharp. Chazal are quite sharp here. So
Do we have to figure it out?
So there's a few things. There are a few hints. So, okay, one hint will come. Let's do the first hint. Okay, well, let's continue in our story and hear a little bit about Aviam's son, because that's going to give us a bit of a clue, right? So back in Malachim. So in the 20th year of Yeravam, Asa takes over. And his mother's name is also Macha Bar Avishalom. Right, this is the problem, right? It can't be the same. Right? There's no incest going on here. That Aviah is married. He didn't marry. Right? It can't be that he has the same name. His mother has the same name as his grandmother. It can't be, and that's why it's not clear exactly whose mother and when she's the queen mother and whatever exactly it is. So this is probably his grandmother rather than his mother, or something like that. And Asa is great. Asa is amazing. He does what David does. And he gets rid of all the idolatrous male prostitutes that his fathers had had. He got rid of it. He deposed his mother, right, from the rank of queen mother, or his grandmother, whoever it was, from queen mother, for making an abomination. There we go. For the goddess Asherah. What exactly it is not clear. Right, it just might be a name for Avodah Zarah. It might be worse. Right, it might be that there was she made on Asherah some sort of protrusion that could be used for sexual acts in honor of Asherah. So it's a mix of sort of every sort of perversion. The only thing he didn't do was get rid of the bamot, right? This we've mentioned before, that in Melachim you have four levels of kings. You have the best kings, right, who get rid of Avodah Zarah and the bamot, which are unauthorized karbanot of mizbachot, but for God. Then you have the second level kings like Asa, who get rid of all of Avodah Zarah, but they don't get rid of the bamot because they're for Hashem anyways. And then you have the ones who leave the agalim of Yeravam, but don't get rid of the Avodah Zarah. And then the ones who have Avodah Zarah, get rid of the Avodah Zarah, but don't get rid of the agalim. And then there's the one who have Avodah Zarah or increase Avodah Zarah and the like. And he brought into the house of God all the consecrated things of his father and his own consecrated things, right? He brings back gold and things to the Beis HaMikdash, right? He's really good. And we'll get to his politics in a minute, which are less obviously good than what we heard. So here, but that's Asa. Okay, so that gives us a slight clue if you read between the lines. And then we can try to put the two stories of his father, of Aviah or Aviam, together. So, what do you think? It takes a bit of detective work, but it works in the end. It works quite magically, actually. Magically. It's depressing. Okay, well, so let's start with clue one, right? Clue one is as follows. Right? If you read Divrei Hayamim by itself, right, you would just say, wow, Aviam is the frummest person known to mankind, right? David is supposed to be king. The Beis HaMikdash is supposed to be where you are. You're supposed to serve God. He gives this amazing speech. And you're like, wow, this guy is so sincere and so frum. He's so amazing. And let's say he gave that speech as it appears in Divrei Hayamim. There's a slight problem with it. And that is, what does it tell you already in Melachim? That Asa got rid of the Avodah Zarah that his fathers had. Which means that with all the frumkite, the same Avodah Zarah that was rampant in the time of Rehavam, which we already saw before, that there was idolatry everywhere. There was idolatrous prostitutes and Asherah and Baal and all this idolatry. Aviah never gets rid of it. So here he is at the top of the mountain screaming at Yeravam, how could you leave David? What are you doing? But what do you mean? You're not so frum. If you really think that it's important to serve God, why are you letting your kingdom serve Avodah Zarah? Why is your mother, right, the queen mother, building Avodah Zarah? We have no evidence that there was actual Avodah Zarah in Yisrael. In Yisrael, we have the Agalim, which we saw are ambiguous. If anything, Yehuda has real Avodah Zarah. And unlike Yeravam, who has an excuse, right? He has an excuse for Avodah Zarah because it helps him politically, because he doesn't want people going to Yerushalayim. In Yehuda, they have Yerushalayim. It's politically expedient for them to worship only God. And yet, the Pasuk insinuates, right? It doesn't tell you right out, but it tells you, yeah, but there was Avodah Zarah going on in the time of Aviyam. So the first way of, you know, dealing with it is that it's totally possible that Aviad did give a speech like this. But he didn't give it because he was religiously committed. Why did he give it? He gave it as a rallying cry for war. It was just a politically expedient thing to say. Right? He didn't actually carry through with it. There was a desire rampant. He didn't care. Right? He didn't really care. Right? And what hint is there in Divrei HaYamim? Right? Because it's always the key. You have to watch the hints in both directions. Because in Divrei HaYamim, it says, when did he say this speech? When he gets to the top of the mountain, he turns to Yeravam, and he screams at Yeravam and Yisrael. This is his pre-war cry. Is how could you do this? So, Divrei HaYamim, which, as we've mentioned, is the story that tries to make, is the book that tries to make Malchut Yehuda look very good, focuses on the good. Meaning, he said something which sounds very frum. He said what's true. That the kingdom is supposed to be Biyad David.
God was also impressed by his speech.
What? God, at some level, right, God was
because
even expressed.
He made a miracle because
correct.
He had hope.
God, right, and God made a miracle, and he's definitely better than Yeravam. Great, fine. But it's not, right, it's already hinting to you that, yeah, but this is part of his political agenda. And the Yerushalmi and Yevamo, though, picks up on a few very sharp things. It has three opinions as to what's going on here and why, how to deal with the story. So, one point it points out is he lies. He lies. Because, what does he say? Yeravam chose to break with David, and he was surrounded by a bunch of riffraff. So the Yerushalmi says, really? Who was it who said that that Yeravam should become king and that Rehavam didn't deserve to be king?
Navi.
The Navi, Achia Sholani, Ashiloni. So the Yerushalmi says, wait a second. Right, read between the lines. What is he really saying? He is pulling from kite. David is king. You can never rebel against David, no matter what happens. But it's not true. Achia Ashiloni came and told him from God that he was supposed to be king. And how do we know? Right? How do we know that they understood that? Because Rehavam, when he tried to do exactly what Aviam did, when he tried to get together an army to rally the troops to get back Malchut Yisrael, the Navi came to him explicitly and said, don't fight against Malchut Yisrael. This is from God. And he said, okay. Right, Rehavam, right to Rehavam, to his credit, we saw, didn't fight a civil war because the Navi told him not to. So Yerushalmi picks up on the fact, one, this isn't fully sincere because he's worshipping idolatry the whole time. He's screaming at the top of the mountain, God, 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 God. There's an idolatry rampant when it's not even politically expedient for him. What?
So if God doesn't want Yehuda to make war with Israel, and he helps a guy that is worshipping idols and is lying to the people, and still God still helps him to kill 500,000 people and to conquer land in Israel? Where does this make sense?
Oh, it didn't say. It's a very complicated story, but right, first, just even being right, working the two out, right? So we've said, right, the stories have very different focuses, meaning in Divrei HaYamim, the story presents always the best possible light for Malchut Yehuda, because the book is about grounding Malchut Yehuda. So if the words he said were the right words, which they were, let's assume he said that, right? How dare you challenge Malchut David? If you're writing a book and you're trying to bolster Malchut Yehuda, well, that's a great speech to record. You don't have to get into the details explicitly. Well, he's a hypocrite. And well, I mean, it's true that Malchut Yehuda deserves to be king, but, you know, technically, at this point, they deserve to lose the kingdom because that was what they were told, right? You don't want to get into that. You want to tell the story in the light that is most beneficial to, right, to Malchut Yehuda. So that's what they do. They tell that story in a way that is beneficial to Malchut Yehuda. But admittedly, right, You know, they can't, you know, they don't have to spell out. They can make it look very rosy, but there's enough hints between the lines. Now, on the other hand, Malachim tells him tell Yuzu he's terrible, right? Because it's true, he follows the same Avodah Zarah, but one of the things that was true is that people worshipping Avodah Zarah didn't mean they weren't also worshipping God. Often, there was either, as we saw in the case of Rechavam, it's not clear he himself worshipped the Avodah Zarah. It could be the kingdom is worshipping Avodah Zarah. He may have been sincere, right? Now, that's not great, right? That definitely cuts out your ability to what's it called, to take the moral high ground. But on the other hand, he might really have been sincere, and there was also syncretism going on, right? There were a lot of people who believed in both God and Avodah Zarah. So they might have, with sincerity, turned to God. And it is true that God tries to support, tries to support Malchut Yehuda, but, here, let me pull up the actual Yerushalmi, just one second. But you're right, you know, when you look at the story, these are, right, totally different stories. Here, the Yerushalmi. Here we go. Okay. Do I can even find it? Yeah, here. So the Yerushalmi Yevamot goes like this. This is the English, because what I can find right now. Right? Yeravam could not muster strength again during the Avayah. God struck him down and he died. Rishmuel said, do you think it was Yeravam who died? No, it was Avayah who died. And why was he struck down? So first the Yerushalmi says that, no, when it says that he died, right, that was Avayah. Avayah actually dies in the end of this battle. Now, what were his sins? So his three possibilities. Rabbi Yochanan said, because he shamed Yeravam publicly. As he states, a great multitude, and having with you the golden calves which Yeravam made as gods for you. Right? Meaning the first problem is he insulted Yeravam. Because it's not really true. Yeravam didn't break away with, right, unjustified. He was justified. Reish Lakish said, because he ridiculed Achiah Sheloni. Because he said that it was scoundrels and riffraff who surrounded Yeravam, which is not true. And then the Rabbanan said it's because idols came into his control and he failed to destroy them, right? And they point out it's not just the Avodah Zarah in Yehuda, it's worse, right? And this is the Makkah B'Patish. Which city did he conquer in Yehuda? Beit El. What was in Beit El?
The Mishkan.
No, the Egel. And he didn't destroy it because it's still there by the next king. He gives this whole rousing speech about how dare you build the Agalim. He conquers the city with the Egel in it. And he doesn't get rid of the Egel. Right? You cannot be more hypocritical than that. Right? So the Yerushalmi is clearly saying that it's totally possible that the story in Divrei Hayamim is true. And that if you read it that way, it can be read very nicely to support Malchut Beit David. But on the other hand, the account in Malachim may be more fair to the actual moral quality of Avayah, who, I understand, your problem is if he's, right, if he's not good, why does God let him kill 500,000 people?
And not only this, God told his father, do not fight Yeravam.
Correct, and he does it. Correct. Now, to be fair, the reason at this point, because at this point Yeravam has already sinned, right? And Hashem already said he's going to take it away from Yeravam. So it's not as bad to be fighting Yeravam. And as we're going to see, in the next generation it gets worse, right? The next generation they fight again, and then the generation after that they actually make an alliance again. And Malchut Yehuda, Malchut Yisrael come close. So Alex Israel just points out that this midrash begins to bridge the gap, right, between the stories. It doesn't fully bridge the gap, right? Charlie's right. But what's the hint that there is even more to the story than either story tells? And that's the end of Divrei Hayamim, right? This is a bit weird, right? Normally, in Malachim, it says the rest is in Divrei Hayamim. Here, it tells you the rest is in Midrash Ido, right? Which means that there is a prophetic Midrash out there that Ido wrote, which means he's telling you that Divrei Yamim is telling you one story, is one narrative. I mean, the side of the story that plays up Malchut Yehuda. The story of Melachim is telling you the story of Melachim. And Melachim, it tells you the problems of Malchut Yehuda and Malchut Yisrael and everybody. But there is a Kava, you know, there is a Chudamish, you know, there's the, right? There is the third Pasuk, right? There's the third, there's something out there which we don't know, which we don't have, called Midrash Ido Hanavi, where clearly there were other traditions, right? And Divrayim is telling you, you want the full story? Yesht, right? Malachim gives you one half of the story. Divrayim gives you the other half of the story. You've got to work out the details, right? And, you know, there's other information that you might need from Ido.
But still, 500,000 people died, and it's not even mentioned in one word in Melachim. It's not something small.
No, it's not at all. It's huge. It's huge.
And it's right? Completely missing.
Well, see, so that's the thing. It's almost completely missing, right? It doesn't tell you how many people died. All it tells you is, oh,
it doesn't say
there was a war. Right? They fought each other. Oh, nachon. They fought each other. Right? That's all it says. It doesn't tell you it's the scale of this civil war. Right, of 800,000 versus 400,000, and they kill 500,000 people. They don't tell you, but it's not true that there's. It's not mentioned at all. It is right. It's swallowed.
It doesn't say. It says
correct, and then no, and then it sort of swallows.
But he
and then it no, it swallows. No, no, in Pasuk Zayin, Umelchamaita ben Aviyam uvein Ravam. By the way, there was war between Aviyam and Ravam. Nachon, there was. It was a massive war. Pasuk Zayin. As an afterthought. V'yeter divrei Aviyam.
Because this is not true, milchamayta ben Rechavam ben Yerovam, because God told him not to.
No, so that's what you have to, this is what you have to assume, is that at the beginning of his life he did it, and later on, right, he did already. He started fighting later on, right? Well, once Yerovam starts sinning, right, so things go downhill, but at the beginning he doesn't. So this is, like I said, one of those examples where you get these radically, radically different stories in Melachim and in Divrei Hayamim. But that brings us really to the end of Melech Aviyam, because we, and the truth is, we've already started the story of Asa, which. Let's look at some of Asa. We might have to come back to it, but Asa, just to sort of wrap up this story.
Where are you reading?
Now back in Melachim, right? This is Melachim Pera. So this is Pasuk Tezayin. Umelchama haita bein Asa uvein Baasha Melech Yisrael kol yimeihem. So then, the next major king of the Jews of Yisrael is Baasha. We don't hear about Baasha yet. It's telescoping, right? Meaning Asa fights Baasha because they're, you know, because they don't start at the same time. So once you start talking about Asa, you mention Baasha and you only hear about Baasha later. But Baasha is the next big king of Israel. Vayal Baasha melech Israel Yehuda.
Baasha is Yerovam's son.
No. Baasha is the king who kills Yerovam's son and takes over because, right, in Yehuda there's continuity. In Israel there's no continuity. But we haven't gotten to Baasha because once you start Asa, so, right, you have to finish Asa and then come back to Baasha. But so Vayal Baasha Melech Yisrael al Yehuda vayivin harama levilti teit yotzeu vava lasa Melech Yehuda. Now Baasha, when he becomes king, he builds a wall, right, or a fortification.
He and Trump.
To not, yeah, exactly, right, to prevent immigration between the north and the south. But now, once you read Divrei Hayamim, right, this is very weird here, because who's going between? What is he afraid of? Right? But once you've read Divrei Hayamim, you realize there was a massive civil war with hundreds of thousands of people. Of course you're going to fortify your border. Of course you are. You were just routed, and the capital cities were conquered. If you manage to get it back, of course, you're going to build a fortification, right? It's not crazy. Vaykach asad kol hakesef hazava notarim betzrot beit Adonai betzrot beit hamelech vaytnim b'yarav adav yishalchem hamelech asayel ben hadad ben tavarmon ben chezion tavrimon ben chezion melech aram ha'yoshev v'damesek leimor. But then, And we're going to have to continue the story, I guess, next time. But what you start to see is that Asa, while religiously he was great, he does something politically which is really not so great. And he one-ups his father in terms of the civil war, right? His father has this huge campaign against Israel. Instead of dealing with it himself, when Baasha starts setting up this fortification, he brings in a third party, and he hires missionaries. And he turns to Aram, and he bribes him, right? He turns to Damascus, and he said, "Brit beni uveneich, uven avi uven avich, hinei shalachti lecha shochad kesev zav, leich hafeira et britchad Baasha melech Israel v'yalem alai." So you hear at this point, there is, as much as there is infighting, Aram has peace with Yehuda and Israel. And Asa says, "I'm going to pay you to break your treaty with my brothers, with Israel, because my treaty came first, right? Because I'm David, and I want you to go fight them because they're building a fortification on their southern border. If you go fight them on the northern border, you come in from Damascus, they'll run away from the southern border, and I'll be able to win." Vayishma ben Hadad el Melech Asa, vayishlach etzarei chayelim asher lo al rei Yisrael, vayach idiyun vedan ved avel beit ma'achav et kol kinrod ved kol eretz Naphtali. So that's what he does. He listens. Like, he was just waiting for the excuse, right? He comes and he captures a bunch of cities up in the north. Vayhi kishmo Baasha v'yachdal mibnod et Aram v'yishev b'tirtza. And Baasha hears this, so he leaves the fortification at the south and he goes back to Tirtza, goes back north. Vamelech Asai Shmi et Kol Yuda Ein Naki Vayisu et Avnei Arama Ve'et Eitzea Asher Bana Baasha Even Bam Hamelech Asai Geva Binyamin Ve'et Mitzpah. And King Asa musters all of Yehuda with no exemptions, and Chazal criticize him because they say, who are the no exemptions? So either they say it means even a chatan, right, who according to the Torah, unless it's a emergency, is exempt from war for 1 year. Or it means Talmidei Chachamim, who are normally exempt from war unless from Milchemet Mitzvah. And the way Alex Israel takes it, which I like, is that what Chazal are really getting at is that Asa makes a mistake. He over-exaggerates. Like, what emergency was it? The guy, of course Baasha was making a fortification. He was scared. So, okay, big deal. You don't need to bring in a third, right, a third country. That was mugzam already. Like, you are so over the top here. And you think it's such an emergency that you need to bring the whole, as if this is, right, it's such an emergency that it goes up to the level that you need to bring the people that are normally exempt from war, and you need to bring them to take down these rocks. And what does he do? He takes them and he rebuilds other cities, right? He fortifies his own cities. Geva Binyamin and Mitzpah, Vieter, Kol Divrei Asa, V'chol Gvaratov, V'chol Asher Asa, V'harim, Sherbana, Elohim HaKtuvim, Al Sefer Divrei HaYamim, V'malchei Yehuda, Rak Leitzik, Nato Chalat, Rak Lav. Right? Everything he did was, you know, it was fine. At the end of his life, he got sick. His feet got, he got sick in his foot. Now in Divrei HaYamim, it's going to play up on this because Asa is going to be less perfect, right? It goes the opposite, right? Avia here is terrible. In Dirayamim, good. Here, Asa, perfect. He just has a foot illness. In Dirayamim, he's okay, but he has serious problems. Vayishkav Asa mavotavi, kaver mavotav bir David, bir David aviv, vaymloch Yehoshafat bino tachtav. Now, if you, right, you go quickly to Dirayamim. Now, in Malachim, the main sin that the Navi talks about is Avodah Zarah. So if you allowed Avodah Zarah, you're the worst, and if you get rid of Avodah Zarah, you're the best. So in the world of Melachim, Asa is great, and Avia is terrible. In Divrei Hayamim, the worst sin in the world is not Avodah Zarah. I mean, Avodah Zarah is bad. But the worst in Divrei Hayamim is arrogance. Consistently. That's part of because it's being written in the time when they're going back to Eretz Yisrael, and the worst thing they can do is be full of themselves. They need a little bit of humility to rebuild and things like that. So we saw that even though Aviyam has Avodah Zarah, what's the one thing that Divrei Hayamim says he has? Humility. Because when he's losing, what does he do? He turns to God. So that is blown up as his big mitzvah, and he's you know, an amazing in Divrei Hayamim. If you go to Rech Asa, on the other hand, right, in this is Perek Yudalit, quickly in Divrei Hayamim, he says, Vayas Asa Tov V'yashar B'nei Adon Elohav. Vayasar Mizvachor Nechav Rav Amod V'yashar B'nei Adon V'yagadei Adai Sherim. Again, he does the good, he gets rid of Avodah Zarah, he gets rid of all of that. Right, the Bamot even. And he tells everybody to go to God and to keep the Torah and the mitzvot. And he gets rid of all the shrines. And there's peace. Right here, you hear about the peace. And here there's peace, right? You don't hear about the external forces. Oh, there's just peace. Let's fortify our cities. Why is he fortifying his cities? He doesn't tell you. It's because he ripped down the fortification of Basha, but okay. And now he has an army of 300,000 men of Yehuda and 280,000 from Binyamin with shields and spears and bucklers and drawing bows. Right, and he has this war. Vayikras al Adonai Elohav vayomar Adonai inimcha la'azor bin rav la'in koach hazreinu Adonai Eloheinu ki alecha nishanu v'shim chavanu al amon hazeh Adonai Eloheinu atal yatzorim chayenosh. He said, O God, help us, because to you it's all the same, whether they're numerous and powerless, and we rely on you. Again, right, the main mitzvah in Divrei Hayamim is trusting God, and he does it perfectly. So they struck them down. So he conquers all the Kushites, and he gets a lot of spoil. They ravage everything. The herdsmen, they get a lot of sheep and camels. Okay, we're not going to get through this whole. It's right, and then you know, Perek Tedvav also tells you how great he was. And if you know, you go through it, right? The Navi Azariah ben Oded Haita Alav Ruach Elohim. Right, so the Navi of Azariah ben Oded comes and he tells to Asa that God is with you and He'll always listen to you as long as you don't forsake Him, and in distress you should turn to God. Right, all the classic Divrei Hayamim things. And this strengthens Asa even more. And you find out in Perek Tedvav, he brings all these korbanot. And he even gets people from other Shvatim, from Ephraim and Menashe and Shimon. And he comes, even people from Yisrael. And he comes and he brings them. And he brings korbanot. And he makes an oath to God. And everyone's happy. And he gets rid of the queen mother. And he gets rid of Avodah Zarah. And all of that. And all that's great. Then in Perek Tedzayin, you find out about the blockade, and then you hear that Asa sends the money to Ben-Hadad. But this is a problem, right? Because in Divrei Hayamim, the worst thing you can do is not Avodah Zarah. I mean, it is, but the main sin that focuses on Avodah Zarah is not trusting God. So while in Melachah maybe it wasn't nice that he took the money and bribed the king to come, in Divrei Hayamim, that undoes everything, right? Suddenly Asa, who was perfect, showed lack of faith in God. So if you skip to Perek Tet Zayin, Pasuk Zayin, Uva'irahi b'chanani haroel Asa melch Yudava yomrei lav, b'shancha melch haram, v'lo nish'anta al Adonai Elohecha, al kingdom l'adchayel melch haram b'yadecha. Oh, because you relied on the king of Aram, and you didn't rely on God, the army of Aram has slipped from your hands. Because he said, "Hello, Kushim Baluvim, Valuvim, Ayula Chayal, Rov, Larechal, Rashin, Larbeim, Obi, Shanchal, Adonai, Nitam Yadecha." The big army. Yeah, he said, "The big army of the right, the Kushim, you weren't afraid of because you trusted in God. But now, you didn't trust in Him for this, and you had to pull in other men. Adonai, Einam Veshodot B'chol Arz Chazekim Levavam Shalem Elav Niskalta Al Zot Kimata Yishim Imcham Melchamot." And God is constantly looking, and whoever are with Him, God will support them. And you were foolish. And that's why you have wars. Vayichos asal haroe, vaytneu beit hamapechet, ki bezaf amav alzot vayratzeitz asam in abayrei. So what does Asa, the big tzaddik, do? He throws the Navi into jail, right, or into the stocks, right? Because he's furious at him and he's cruel to the people. V'inei divrei Asa rishonim v'achronim minam ktuvim al sefer ha-malachim liyudal Yisrael v'echala Asa b'shna shloshim v'teisha malchuto b'raglav ad l'malach chalyo v'gam chalyo lo darash adonai kiberofim. And he gets an acute foot ailment, and even when he's sick, he doesn't turn to God, he turns to the doctors. V'yishkav Asa m'vtav v'yamat b'shna arbeim v'achat malacho, when he dies and he's buried, etc. Right? Same, right? So, Asa, it flips. He's still good, but, right, in Malachim, you get a hint that he doesn't have faith in God because he's relying on third parties and he's calling a state of emergency when it's not really an emergency. But in Divrei Hayamim, the worst thing you can do is not have faith in God. So the minor sin of Asa in Divrei Hayamim is blown up. And sorry, in Malachim is blown up in Divrei Hayamim because you didn't have faith in God. So you see that actually opposite phenomenon where Aviah. Avodah Zarah is the worst thing in Malachim.
But he
trusted
God.
But at the moment of his downfall, he trusted in God and tried to strengthen Yehuda. And since trust in God and supporting Yehuda are the most important things in Vayamim, he's a hero. Asa is a somewhat hero, but in Malachim, he's basically a pure hero on the religious front. On the political front, he's like kacha kacha because he brings a third party. But in Malachim, that's not so bad. In Vayamim, where the message is trust in God, the fact that he goes to a third party is terrible, and his foot ailment is no longer like, oh, he happens to have a foot ailment, is you got the foot ailment because of this, and you didn't turn to God even then, you went to doctors, right? So you get the balance, we're both, right? It's not trying to whitewash Malchut Yehuda. What it's trying to do is, it's telling a certain message. It's, the important thing is to trust in God, right? And it's Malchut Yehuda is basically a good thing, and you can't trust in outside parties. So anyone who manages to hit those becomes good. In Malachim, it's about Avodah Zarah. So whoever doesn't worship Avodah Zarah, he's good. Right? So therefore, Aviyam and Racha and Asa actually flip who is, right, how good and how bad they are between the two books, depending on the story that it's trying to tell. Okay, well, that's a good